Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher, 8:06 on this Thursday. It's March 30th, 23 degrees currently here in Old Town Park City. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Thomas Guboy. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. Happy Thursday or happy Friday Eve. The weather whiplash, it just continues. Yesterday, it felt like spring. Then the cold front moved through. And it definitely doesn't feel like it out there today. So the cold front that has since moved away to the east. We are still seeing some snow in the Wasatch back, but it's mainly up towards the Ogden Valley at this point. But as we go through today, we'll be looking at a chance for more snow showers. The daytime high in Park City only climbing to 33. But the reason why we're sticking around with the chance for additional snow showers is because even though the cold front's moving away to the east, the upper level low pressure that's tapping into the atmospheric river is working its way in our direction. So that's why we'll have those extra dynamics. And with that moisture that we still have, we're going to hold on to the chance for showers. But when we, even after that particular low pressure moves away as we go into tonight, we're not done by any stretch of the imagination when it comes for the chance for snow, because we'll actually see a winter weather advisory go into effect for the Wasatch back, including Park City, starting this evening, and will continue through noon tomorrow, because a trailing shortwave behind the upper level low pressure itself will work its way in. And with the northwesterly flow and all that moisture in place, there's going to be the chance for some heavy snow as we go through tonight. And in Park City during the overnight hours alone, we could pick up between 3 to 7 inches, which means the Friday morning commute could even be worse compared to what we're seeing out there currently. The overnight low tonight dropping to 23 degrees, and the best chance for snow on our Friday will continue through the first portion of the day. We might see some snow showers linger into the afternoon, but high pressure will try to work its way in as we go from the afternoon into tomorrow night, but still a 90% chance of snow showers generally before 1 o'clock. And then that chance will gradually go down as we go from the daytime hours into the nighttime, then eventually going to mostly clear skies by Friday overnight, as the overnight low drops to 19 degrees. So it will be feeling like winter over the next, I would say, 36 to 48 hours. On Saturday, with the high pressure in place, it's going to be a pretty nice day. With more of a southerly flow as well, we'll see the temperature climb back into the low 40s in Park City. So Saturday, if you want to enjoy some time outside, if you want to enjoy the sunshine, that's going to be your day to do it, because as we continue on this cycle, as we get a couple of days of wet weather, we get one calm day, and then things ramp right back up from late Sunday into Monday. It looks like our next storm system will move in, and it looks to be a pretty good chance as we go through Monday, and we could bring even more healthy accumulations. The daytime high on Monday dropping to the middle 30s, so we'll be in the low to mid 40s on Saturday, and by the time we get into Monday, daytime highs will be close to freezing. Then as we go into Tuesday and Wednesday of next week, the unsettler could be sticking around. I don't think snow showers will be as likely compared to Monday, but there's still going to be at least a 50-50 chance, if not better. Daytime highs in the upper 20s, overnight lows Monday night, Tuesday night will be in the mid-teens. So a couple of little tastes of spring, but mainly still winter over the next 7 days, Leslie.
Yeah, sure sounds like it. Okay, thank you, Thomas. And it's winter in the backcountry still, too. On the phone with us with the Utah Avalanche Forecast Center, we've got Nikki. Good morning.
Good morning. So things were generally quiet in the backcountry yesterday. We didn't get too many reports of new avalanches, but since the Monday, we've gotten about 25, so worth checking out that list online. Today, we've got two main problems. The first is going to be the wind-drifted snow. So we got, you know, somewhere between 7 and 14 inches of new snow in the mountains, favoring upper Little Cottonwood. That soft snow is available for transport. We've got elevated winds accompanying this front. For that reason, you'll likely find new and developing slabs of wind-drifted snow at all mid and upper elevations. Today, you're going to want to look for blowing and drifting snow and avoid any slopes with the freshly deposited of wind-drifted snow. As well, we keep talking about the cornices. We've gotten a few reports of natural cornice fall. They're massive in the backcountry, and they just continue to grow. With today's new snow and high winds, we'll likely see them breaking naturally. So give them a bit of room, give them a wide berth, don't travel below them. And then the second thing we want to talk about is just the new snow. So as the snowfall totals increase, the avalanche danger is going to increase as well. When the snowfall rates are higher, so generally greater than 1 inch per hour, avalanches will be easier to trigger and act more like a cohesive slab. So pay attention to changing weather and increased snowfall rates today.
All right. Hey, thanks, Nikki. Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be checking in with Summit County Councilmember Chris Robinson. Later on, Park City Recreation Director Ken Fisher and Coordinator Cole Johnston discussing the pickleball tennis pilot program at the Mark. And finally, Summit County Planner Madeline McDonald, along with PIO Derek Sitaway, will have details about the ongoing visioning process and how you can participate. Later on, stay tuned for Cool Science Radio. Today's guests include award-winning journalist Kate Zernecki about her new book, The Exceptions, Nancy Hopkins, MIT, and the Fight for Women in Science. Then research professor Maureen McCarthy talks about the effects of megastorms and atmospheric rivers. All of that coming up on today's edition of Cool Science Radio. And of course, you can hear Cool Science Radio every Thursday morning between 9 and 10. Coming up now on 8:12, good morning. Well, a local man had his e-bike stolen from the parking lot of Basin Recreation back in the summer of 2021. This month, a Summit County Sheriff's deputy helped recover it. KPCW's Andrea Buchanan has this report.
James LaChapelle said he went to the Basin Recreation Fieldhouse late morning on July 27th via his Trek Powerfly 5 full suspension e-bike. When he arrived, he cabled and locked his bike and walked over to Smith's for a quick errand. He said, quote, "I thought leaving my bike in front of the fieldhouse would be safer than Smith's." Based on security camera footage, moments after LaChapelle returned to the fieldhouse and went inside, a man with a bag walked up to LaChapelle's bike, took out a large bolt cutter, cut the cable, and stole the bike. LaChapelle said when he came out of the fieldhouse a couple of hours later, his bike was gone, and thus began the two-year AirTag Ping Odyssey. LaChapelle had installed a $29 Apple AirTag into the battery compartment on his bike. AirTags are tracking devices just over an inch in diameter that emit Bluetooth signals that anonymously connect to any nearby device active within Apple's Find My network. According to LaChapelle, based on the initial AirTag pings, the thief brought the bike to an apartment building in West Valley City, but LaChapelle couldn't tell which apartment unit it was in. LaChapelle said he searched the area with West Valley City police officers shortly after it was stolen, but the bike's location was unclear because the device pings only when it's around another iPhone. Over the next few months, LaChapelle received pings from various nearby addresses depending on where an iPhone came near the bike. On one occasion, the AirTag pinged that the bike was near Solitude. LaChapelle tried to go after it, but by the time he got to the location, the bike was gone and back in West Valley. Tim Berger is a sergeant with the Summit County Sheriff's Office. He said last week, Deputy Vince Wynn with the Special Enforcement Unit learned about the missing bike and the tracking device from an employee at Storm Cycle in Kimball Junction.
One of the members there at Storm was like, "Hey, you know, we have an older gentleman that came in and was telling us about this bicycle that he had stolen and that he actually has a GPS tracker on it," which, to my knowledge, was never brought up 2 years ago when the actual theft took place.
This tip led Wynn to LaChapelle, and the two worked together to gather the latest AirTag ping location, which led them to people who had purchased the bike. They said they didn't know it was stolen and promptly gave it to deputies.
Obviously, we're not going to hold them accountable at that point for having stolen property. So we explained to them, and they happily handed over the property, you know, even though they're out, you know, a few thousand dollars for that specific bike when they purchased it.
Berger said there is no simple way to know whether a used item is stolen, but he said calling law enforcement could get a courtesy check on items that have a serial number. He said that wouldn't account for items that have been stolen and not reported, so it's not foolproof. His best advice was, if the offer is too good to be true, then steer clear. People buying used items can also ask sellers for receipts or records of purchase as a way to check whether they're buying something from its rightful owner. Of course, not everyone keeps receipts, but asking a few questions about where and when something was bought might flag a potential suspicious sale. Even though it took 2 years to find LaChapelle's bike, Berger said a GPS tracker is an added layer of protection to prevent theft.
And you can put these on any type of property as long as you have a good way of keeping that GPS unit charged. Mm-hmm. That's the only caveat to these GPS units, is they only hold a charge for so long. That's what's really nice about the e-bikes, is sometimes you can tap right into the e-bike's power source, and as long as the e-bike is powered up, then you're getting constant power to your GPS unit as well.
There are various GPS tracking devices that operate with different types of smartphones. They range in price from $29 to $129. LaChapelle's e-bike is currently parked at the sheriff's office until he returns from vacation. Andrea Buchanan, KPCW News.
8:16. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. The Summit County Council met yesterday. On the phone with a recap, Councilmember Chris Robinson. Good morning.
Hi, Leslie.
Let's start with the first quarter financials report. The council heard from Financial Officer Matt Levitt. So how are things looking?
You know, the amazing takeaway from that is how our sales taxes across the board have really performed, whether it be the transient room tax, restaurant tax, the local option, our transit taxes. You know, we always want to look at, well, what happened prior to COVID and then what happened during COVID and so forth. But the receipts are, you know, continue to grow. You probably hear from the Chamber Bureau and things like that, maybe occupancy is down, but the room rental rates are higher and leading to a higher, you know, net revenue against revenue against which you apply the tax rates. But it's a positive picture. Now, I don't think they can keep growing at these kind of rates. Maybe they can. Having Sundance back didn't hurt a bit either. But it's a good picture.
Yeah, the county manager has seemed optimistic about the county's ability to absorb some of the additional costs associated with the Silver Summit County Services Building. So did Levitt's presentation convince you that the county does have enough money for these cost overruns?
I think the sales taxes that we've discussed are specific buckets that can't be used for just anything. The manager has a plan to pay for the services buildings. The council is wrestling with whether we're getting good value and that's the right place to spend it. The manager has a managers, including the deputy manager. They both have a way to pay for it. We're just wanting to make sure it's the right thing to do. But these taxes, there wasn't a lot of sales taxes in my recollection that were going into it, maybe some transient room tax due to, they're supposed to be used to promote tourism, and there was a convention or kind of, I don't want to say center, but there was some space in there that could be used for large gatherings that was part of the building, and therefore qualified for TRT. But I think it, like I say, that what we heard on sales taxes yesterday was really not applicable to those buildings.
Yeah. So when will the county decide what gets built there? Because earlier this month, you discussed the need for some cutbacks. Are those still going to need to happen?
My recollection of our last meeting was we asked the team to go back and give us what $27 million would buy, and then to also make some other changes less dramatic to their original plan and see what savings that those generated. And I don't recall when they're coming back. It was somewhat urgent, I think, so I suspect we'll see it in the next few weeks.
All right. Moving on to Mountain Regional Water, the council considered approving a budget increase of about $1.4 million for Mountain Regional's administration and maintenance facilities. I guess, is there a timeline for when these get built?
I think I'm not on their administrative control board, and so I react to what's brought before us. But I think what's happening is they were, I've got to get this acronym right. The Construction Management General Contractor, CMGC, is the acronym that they are wanting to, they did an RFP and have selected Oakland Construction to start on the design process. And so the budget amendments that they sought were to allow for that. And also what was not fully discussed but mentioned was some additional site work, but that's still pending. So they own a piece of land. It's experiencing some grading. That's the pending part. They want to engage a team that includes Oakland Construction to do this construction management general contractor and help them design and value engineer a building. And so, none of that work would happen this year, but it would be the lead up to it happening maybe next year, what my guess would be.
So how is this building being paid for? Do you know that? I mean, is it through impact fees and new connections, or is it including existing ratepayers as well?
I don't think that I haven't heard that they're raising rates to build this facility. I'm not exactly sure. They do own a facility over there at Silver Creek Village. They own a building, and I suppose they would sell it. And, Mountain Regional has grown a lot over the years, and they don't even have space to really store any of their equipment you know, like their backhoes and dump trucks and things. They have them scattered around in various places. They're operating out of kind of a business park over there by Triumph. I don't know if you know what I mean, but they, you know, they've been operating out of marginal facilities, and so, but I don't believe that, you know, that I have confidence in their management, and I don't believe that they're planning on any ratepayer hikes. I mean, obviously, ratepayers are part of their cash flow and how they, what reserves and what mechanisms, what bonding, what they might do, I don't know.
All right, let's see. Board of Equalization. Last year, many homeowners complained about their rising property taxes. The county assessor updated the council on those reassessments yesterday. The disputes have ranged from small appeals to larger legal action. How much of a headache has this been?
Well, I mean, the headache for the council has been that we've had a vocal minority, an educated vocal minority, it's not lately, but, you know, during the fall and late last year, that was challenging the correctness of the tax roll and things, which were really not in our wheelhouse to correct or do much with. The assessor has asked for and been given additional help, and I tried to discern yesterday whether what she was saying is that she has corrected any deficiencies such that all parcels in the 2023 tax year will be appropriately valued, whether there is a detailed valuation or a massive valuation. And it wasn't a yes or no answer to that question, but what I took away from it was that they'll all be, that there's a system in place to do it better. So, you know, time will tell. It's kind of a moving target. We had this huge run-up. She reported that we had a $10 billion increase in taxable value 2022 over 2021. And that's like a third increase, 33% increase or something. It was like from $35 billion to $45 billion or $25 to $35, I don't remember. But it's a huge number. And then so now she mentioned it. There's that news article about how on the coasts, luxury properties are declining in value, but maybe not so. It was highlighting that Park City was, Summit County was holding its own. You know, will there be a downdraft? Of course, the January 1 is the important date. That it, what was happening on January 1, 2023 was the market falling, rising. But, you know, we have this big run up now. Is it tapering? Is it going up a little? Is it going down a little? And how that's all going to cook out in the tax roll on 42,000 properties, you know, that's the question. I don't have the answer, but she's making the sound that it'll be better.
Yeah, and she has a new data analyst, I think, hired as well, so that should make an impact.
Yeah, you know, and we didn't meet him. His name is Matt Boyer. He's our IT director's son, Ron Boyer's son. But his credentials, he's a graduate of Utah State and was the valedictorian at North Summit and studied a lot of STEM, a lot of hard science, mathematics. And I wish I had his resume in front of me, but he seems very impressive to me.
Great.
I think it'd be a good ad.
Let's get the latest. What's the latest on the county's flood response?
Well, we have Catherine McMullen as our, you know, emergency management officer, and she has a weekly every Monday, you know, update. The county is working closely with Weber Basin and the state to try to get ditches and canals and waterways cleaned up, staging equipment where possible at key points, you know, like if you know you've got a culvert that could plug on a main road, you might stage a piece of equipment there if you have it. It's also a sandbag operation. You can go to www.summitcounty.org/flooding and find out the locations where you can pick up sandbags. We've ordered, I think we have 30,000. We've asked for another 60,000 and something. There's multiple locations where you can go and get those. It's going to depend a lot on how the snow melt occurs, if it's slow and steady or whether it's abrupt. But we continue to get it, you know, but it's time will tell how big of a problem we're going to have.
Okay. I wanted to ask about this, the conflict of interest reports that are required annually, is my understanding. None were filed, and I guess I thought that you at least had to report personal property, no? Or business interests?
When you say none were filed, everyone filed a report. You're claiming that nobody identified conflicts.
Right.
I identified several on mine, all of my family's land holdings and my personal residence and different involvements in which I am with nonprofits and things. I didn't study all the others, but they're there for the looking. David Warnock reported he didn't see anything, but anyway.
Didn't see any conflicts. I see. Okay.
Any conflicts, yeah.
Got it. All right. Let's move on to the opioid settlement fund. This is money I believe that was due to litigation between Summit County and some of the big pharma companies that have paid out, or was this specifically
yes.
with Summit Counties, or is this part of that larger national lawsuit?
The latter. Our county attorney, Margaret Olson's done a great job in the county was one of the early plaintiffs among counties in this state as part of class action lawsuit, and has been been a leader in helping manage that litigation from at least the Utah County's side of things. And there have been two settlements, one that was in the packet represented and another that Aaron Newman mentioned that have come down. There'll be kind of ongoing annuity payments coming out of these settlements, annual payments. So, it's part of a bigger deal. It's not huge money, but every little bit helps. And there's lots of plaintiffs. I mean, lots of defendants. You know, this was just settlement with one category. But the money gets split among many plaintiffs, many counties, and attorneys, of course, get their cut, which is probably not insignificant.
Right. Finally, I just wanted to note that our county manager needs a house, and it sounds like we may have found him one. It's a cabin there just off of Bittner Road. He's going to be charged $500 a month rent, but according to Councilmember Roger Armstrong, that could inadvertently balloon he mentioned something like up to $4,000 a month. Why would that be?
Well, we entered into an employment agreement with the county manager saying that we would provide $2,000 a month as a housing allowance if he chose to take it. And the county could buy him housing. We purchased last year some 40 acres from a PAC estate that was needed, a road for a quarter mile or more needed to go through it. And the settlers wanted to get rid of the whole thing. And for the connection with Silver Creek with the Bittner Ranch Road. So the county bought the whole thing. It does have this cabin on it. And so the lease would be, the manager would forego the $2,000. He would pay $500, and then where Roger was concerned, so that's $2,500 of value that he's foregoing. And then we've set it up triple net lease where the tenant, in other words, the manager, would be paying for taxes, and there would be a privilege tax, it's called, because on the house, so that their assessor, and then insurance, so that's on top, and so there it could be taxes and insurance. You know, Roger was concerned when you add all those things up, it might equate to $4,000 a month. I think that was a little hyperbole. We don't know the real numbers. We're working on that. We're not trying to saddle the manager with a deal that's over market. But it seems like a good solution, to me at least, that this little cabin. I should say that the seller originally was going to tear it down. And then when we were buying the property, we put in a condition that if you tear it down, you've got to post a $50,000 bond to make sure you clean it up. And then they said they'd just leave it. And we're glad we did. It's a pretty nice little cabin. It needed some work and it's been some effort put into it. But it'll be a nice it'll be a nice solution.
Okay. And who pays for who pays for any of the improvements?
County has been fixing it up. I was told that the county it needed new windows and some insulation and things. There's a little bit more to do, but the county will put it in a condition so it's habitable. It's not like it's a pioneer era cabin. It's, you know, probably 30 or 40 years old. It's one of those log. It's like 10, 12 inch diameter logs that have been put together as a kit.
Okay. I've got to leave it there. Chris, thanks for your time this morning.
Thanks a lot. Take care.
Well, the Park City Recreation Department will be running a tennis and pickleball mixed-use pilot program. This starts Monday, April 3rd, and will run through May 7th. In the studio with details, I have Recreation Director Ken Fisher, along with Racquet Sports Division Manager Cole Johnstons. Good morning to both of you.
Morning, Leslie.
Morning, Leslie.
Ken, you've taken a lot of heat personally over not allowing the two sports to play side by side at a public recreation facility. Is this you calling uncle here?
No, not at all. I mean, really what it is, as you know, we haven't allowed side by side play in the tennis bubble. And this is really an opportunity for us to see if it is compatible. Right. There are certain times where there may be an empty tennis court. And if there's a way that we can maximize that use and not impact a huge impact on the other users, I think it's something we just need to explore. So we've got some data for when we make our court usage policy for next winter.
Okay. Well, talk to us a little bit why this hasn't been done before, because I know there is some concern, I think, of the pickleball would create too much noise. It'd be too disruptive to tennis players.
Yeah, really. And that's been our stance. And we've been out there with decimal readers, and we think it could be the case, but we also just want to test it and see. I think there are different levels of tennis players, as there are pickleball players. Some tennis players, it may not impact them. Other people that may take the game more seriously or something, it may be a greater impact on them. So we're just trying to, again, get that feedback to evaluate it.
Okay, so Cole, this is only going to happen inside the bubble, not on the indoor tennis courts?
Correct, at this time, yeah. We have pickleball lines in the bubble currently. Right now we don't have those lines on the indoor courts. So we want to test those, that playing surface. That's where we do have those portable pickleball nets, as well as those lines already painted on the courts under the bubble.
Yeah, and this pilot program happening only on certain days and times. So why were these particular days and times chosen?
Well, really, we wanted to get sort of a different aspect from different days and different players. Obviously, we also wanted to make sure that there were opportunities, to keep the schedule sort of as is, where it is currently dedicated tennis. Also, there's times where it's dedicated pickleball. But we wanted to get some weekdays as well as some weekend days where we could allow some mixed-use time and then get that feedback from those players across those different days.
Yeah, so are we going to see days and times where the courts are, used, heavily used, so that we really get an impact on what it could be like?
Yeah, I think that's our hope, right? I think we've dialed in on some mixed-use times where we would probably consider more of prime time, specifically Monday mornings from 8 a.m. to noon. Wednesday afternoons from noon to 3. Those are sort of definitely more of our prime time hours during the week. And then obviously those weekend times, we've got Saturdays from 1 to 3 and then Sundays from 11 to 1. So to try to target maybe that weekend warrior player. So go from there.
Okay. And are you kind of, how are you giving people a heads up, I guess, that are scheduling tennis time to let them know that you will be playing alongside pickleball players?
Yeah, so certainly we've gotten a lot of information out on social media and on our website and all that, as well as when patrons book a court on Play by Point, our software system, they'll get a pop-up box that will say, there could be pickleball going on while you're playing tennis, and there could be, you know, vice versa.
Yeah, so I guess once these pilot program dates are finished, then what? I mean, how do you know whether or not this is going to work?
So we've created a survey, and that survey will be accessible hopefully right there in the bubble with a QR code that people can provide their feedback as soon as they're done playing. And really, you know, we'll take a look at that data and you know, probably use that to come up with an operational plan for next winter.
Yeah, so if the survey results show you that tennis players don't like it and pickleball players are ecstatic about having that extra playing time, I mean, how do you come up with a new policy?
Well, I don't know if it will be new. It might be tweaked. And I think really, right, we got to get that data back. We got to analyze it. We'll have a couple of months to work through it. And I think one of the key things is that we've done with these operational plans is that they've gone through the Recreation Advisory Board and then as well as to City Council. So there is, you know, an opportunity for the public to chime in and, you know, either support or disagree with what our plan will be for next winter.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, the pickleball enthusiasts, I mean, what they've said all along is that, you know, this is a recreation, you know, city-sponsored facility. If you don't like it, you know, you can join a private club, right?
Yeah, I mean, we hear, you know, from all sides. I think it is important to support both, right, activities. Pickleball is certainly a great sport that has proven to build community together and get people active, right? And that's really what it's about. So if there's a way that we can continue to accommodate both sports, I mean, I think that makes sense. You know, as we've talked about, there are only 7 indoor tennis courts in all of Summit County, and there are 16, I think, pickleball courts on gymnasium floors that people can play on. And we realize that some pickleball players prefer to play on a tennis court, but it's also played on gymnasium floors throughout the country. And, you know, Cole's done a great job of adding a lot of pickleball in our gym, and people are enjoying it, and they're playing, and it's being well used. So I think there's a matter of, right, some give and take on both sides that has to happen.
And the gymnasium, though, has got other uses as well, right? I mean, it's basketball, line dancing. I don't know what else you got going there.
Oh, you name it. Basketball, volleyball, soccer, you know, pretty much any activity.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we're busy, right? And that's really, you know, the long-term goal would be to get pickleball their own dedicated facilities.
Yeah. Talk a little bit about that. Where do things stand with that perhaps getting built out at Quinn's Junction?
Yeah, so we went to City Council back in the beginning of February with a list of recreation projects that included a renovation of the pools at the PC Mark, some expanded fitness, a complete rebuild of the City Park building, and then that third project was an indoor-outdoor pickleball facility that also includes outdoor ice sheet and community space for, you know, winter trail users to come in and change their clothes and so on and so forth before getting out in the winter trails. So we've been working actively to get an architect firm on board so that we can begin designs. In that November meeting, February meeting, there was support from City Council to look at putting a bond on the November ballot. So we've really been working in that direction, try to get that done.
Yeah, any cost estimates at this point?
Oh boy, I mean, our cost estimates originally were in about the $45 million range. So we have talked about potentially a $50 million bond on the ballot.
All right, and if something were to be built at Quinn's Junction, then would it become a multi-use facility, or is it gonna be pickleball specific, and then that leaves the bubble for tennis?
Yeah, right, I think it's, I will say it's multi-use, but it could be multi-use in really a different way. We have a large number of youth that play tennis, and it's very possible that we could be doing youth tennis clinics out at that facility at Quinn's, because they play on a court that is basically the size of a pickleball court. And then that would actually could free up some tennis courts. So, right, we want to try to maximize the facilities as much as we can. And if we need to juggle those uses, I think it would be smart for us to look at that.
Okay. So how many courts do we have under the bubble?
We have three tennis courts, and they convert into six pickleball courts.
Okay. When does that bubble come off? I guess when the snow stops.
Yeah, well, that's, I mean, this was one of the reasons we did this at this time. The bubble's scheduled to come down on May 8th.
Ah, okay.
So we sort of have that cutoff end date for
us. Okay. And then when do you think you'll have some kind of reporting back to council and the rec board?
I would say probably by July. We'll be able to, you know, go through May 8th, analyze that. June and July wouldn't take long.
All right. While you're here, I guess you'd probably like to remind folks that you've got summer recreation programs registration opening tomorrow.
Yeah, April 1st.
April 1st.
April 1st. So
that's Saturday, I guess.
Saturday, yeah. Mm-hmm. April 1st, registration opens at, Cole, you're going to know this, 8 a.m.?
I believe it's 8 a.m., yep.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's for everything. We've already done most of our summer camp registration has happened. So this would be, you know, for all our other programs from tennis to swimming to skateboard lessons to adventure camp, all those great programs.
All right, so basically sold out for summer camp?
Yes, yes.
Like in the first few
right,
hours.
And that's really one of the reasons, you know, we're looking to rebuild the City Park building. That's a great program, and it's high demand. So really, we could probably offer a summer day camp that housed 200 kids versus 100.
Oh, okay. Would that be part of this $50 million bond?
It would, yes.
Okay. Anything else you'd like to tell us?
Cool.
I'm good.
Okay. Again, people can start registering then for those dates and times?
Yeah, so Saturday, 8 a.m. is when registration opens. Obviously, we encourage everyone to, you know, make sure their login works online. If they're really, you know, vying for a spot, they want to test those things prior and then be on there right at 8 a.m. and get those programs registered for online.
Okay, yeah. And then when they register for the pickleball and tennis courts as well, starting April 3rd, they can do that online?
Yeah, so that's actually already open for registration. Right now, our tennis courts are open to the public 1 week in advance. So those courts, you know, starting for Monday, opened this week. And, you know, we've already seen some reservations take place for both tennis and pickleball. So we're excited and looking forward to it.
Okay. Any guesses when the golf course opens?
I asked Vaughn. I think he should do a community pool,
yeah,
you know, to guess. So I don't know. I think he had said May 1st, but I don't know this rate. And from our end too, right, we're likely going to have delayed openings for our fields this year. So that's just one more challenge that we're dealing with.
Okay. Ken Fisher, Cole Johnston, thanks so much for your time.
Thanks, Leslie.
Well, our summit community visioning is ongoing, and the future of Summit County is up to you. On the phone to tell us what this is and how you can participate, I have Summit County Planner Madeline McDonough, and we're hoping that Eric Sitaway will be joining us as well. But good morning to you, Maddie.
Morning, Leslie. How are you?
Great. So why don't you start by telling us what this is and why we're doing it?
So this is a visioning process for everyone who touches Summit County. We're talking about residents, people who work here but don't necessarily live here, seasonal employees, part-time employees, volunteers, people who recreate in the county. And we want to be able to get feedback from as many people as possible on this project. The goal is to create a vision for the future of Summit County. So what do we want Summit County to look like, feel like, act like, smell like in the future? And the ultimate end result of this whole process will be a vision that will guide the future of the county, and will have strategic next steps that the county can take to be able to meet the goals and visions that are created by the community members. Yeah. So that's what we're talking about.
So hasn't something like this already been done?
So something like this has been done in pieces in the county in the past. The last sort of big visioning efforts that we've had were related to general plans. So one for the Snyderville Basin and one for Eastern Summit County. We've also done some visioning that's specific to things like the rail trail corridor. But this is an overall county-wide visioning process. So something like this hasn't been done for quite some time.
Yeah, so how long do you anticipate this taking?
Yeah, so the project started in earnest really in January of this year. and the four phases of the community outreach will last until November of this year. And at that point, there will be a draft of this, of the vision, goals, and strategies presented to the community, and then ultimately presented to the county council for adoption and approval.
Yeah, so the plan gets adopted or approved. Then is it incorporated into the general plans for the, you know, the east side and Centerville Basin general plans?
So the way that a vision, the visioning process works is kind of like, this is the overall umbrella. And then from the vision, we might have strategic next steps that say, based on this, the vision and goals that were created by the community, we should update the general plan to reflect those. Or we might need to update the development codes to reflect the vision goals created by the community. So this isn't something that gets adopted into the general plan, but it could potentially influence the creation of an updated general plan.
Okay, so how do people get involved? I know you've had some kickoff meetings. Were those well attended?
Yeah, they were fairly well attended. I think the weather was a little bit of a challenge, certainly for the ones in January. We've had a variety of different opportunities, and folks are still have lots of ways to get involved. There's an online questionnaire that asks general questions of what does the community love about Summit County? What do they think could be better? That's available online and through the end of the month. And we also have a mailer questionnaire that was sent out to everybody who lives in Summit County. So you can fill out the paper version of that and drop it off in a ballot box drop-off location, or you can use the prepaid envelope, and that gets sent back to me. So it looks like I'm very popular right now. And then during the next several phases of this project, we'll have more in-person opportunities to be able to provide feedback. And we're also going to be doing some more targeted questions. So, you know, based on this first questionnaire, what we hear from folks, we'll then ask follow-up questions to get more specific, to really understand what it is that the community wants moving forward.
Yeah. So I haven't seen one of those questionnaires come through the mail. You said everybody's getting one. Should they already have them?
They should be, if they have not already received them, they should be coming momentarily. We sent out about 23,000 of those.
Okay. Yeah. So you're putting stuff online, and I guess that's just summitcounty.org/visioning or something like that?
It's oursummitcounty.com is the project website. Okay. And then there's also a link to that from the Summit County government website as well from the homepage.
Okay, and as you put stuff up, and you say they're just, it's being left for just a month, so people kind of need to check back to do some of the information that you're looking for?
So the first questionnaire has been on the website for 2.5 months so far. So that one will be coming down so that we can start putting up some more specific questions moving forward. But yeah, what you're saying about checking back is incredibly important. We're going to be asking for additional feedback, more specific feedback, and we'll be updating different opportunities and ways to get involved. We're also going to be planning a learning series for the community so that we can get some more specific feedback. So, for example, we're planning to host an evening event potentially that would say, you know, this is what transportation in Summit County looks like. You know, here's all the plans that already exist. Here's some of the things that we're considering. Now, community, please give us your feedback on transportation. So all of that information will be available on the website as well.
Okay. So it looks like what you've got up there now is looking for a lot of demographic information just in that first questionnaire. You also have what you're calling our Summitscapes, the Art Map Competition. What's this about?
Yeah. So we're trying to tap into this incredibly creative community that we have in Summit County to create an image that can be recognizable and really help to tell the story of what our community members want to see in the future of Summit County. So what we're asking for is graphic submissions of the map of Summit County. And that's pretty vague. It's meant to be vague so that we can get some really, you know, unique and a variety of different entries to this. But what we're thinking is people recognize the shape of the map of Summit County, but we have so many creatives and artists in our community that could really add to that map and make it something that is representative of what people really want to see. We have a couple of examples on the website. One of them was created by me. It's not great, but it's there. But we're really just looking for the inspiration from the community. An entrance to that competition, they will win a prize that they will help decide what the prize is based on their interest. And then we're also hoping to be able to put that image in the final plan as well as potentially on a t-shirt.
Okay. Let's see. You also have appointed what you're calling our Summit Ambassadors. This is what you've got, 8 different folks, it looks like. What's the role of these folks?
Yeah, so our Summit Ambassadors are a group of community members who volunteered to really help steer the project from the community lens. So they're working with the county staff as well as our consultant project team, and they're helping to review materials and documents ahead of time. They're helping us to be able to write some of these questions so that they are written in a way that makes sense to the community at large. They're helping us target specific community groups by doing tabling or reaching out to their networks. And so this group has been really helpful in figuring out, you know, are we addressing the things that we need to be addressing in this process, or are we missing anything? And though that group is full for the moment, there is another group that folks can join called the Community Connectors. And you don't have to have quite as much time to dedicate to the project as a Community Connector, but we're looking for folks who can, once again, tap into these different communities throughout Summit County and help us to make sure that we're getting a representative sample of what people really want to see. So information to apply to be a Community Connector is also on the website.
All right. And you've also made an effort to put the information in Spanish. So also looking for that Latino input as well.
Absolutely. Yes. And we're actively working with as many groups as we can to, you know, get that group involved, the Latino and Hispanic community involved. So on the project website, there's also an indication of which events will have a Spanish person who speaks Spanish in attendance, just in case that, you know, folks feel more comfortable providing their input. In-person input in Spanish as well.
Yeah. So I guess, why is it important that people, you know, take a minute and check in with this? If you have something to say now, now's the time to say it, as opposed to complaining later on.
Yeah, that's right. This opportunity, it seems as though this is sort of this big amorphous, you know, it's just a vision. How could this really impact things? But in fact, this is where public opinion matters the most, because it's going to impact so many different policies, decisions, plans, everything moving forward. So if you want to have an impact on the future of Summit County, this is really your chance to get in on the ground floor and make your voice heard.
Okay. And at what point are you going to start sharing some of the results that you've collected?
Yeah, so at the end of this month, when the first questionnaire closes, we'll have a full summary of the first round of engagements. That would have been from January through the end of March. And that will include a summary of all of the survey responses, the question responses, so folks can see how are other community members responding to this. So all of that information will be available on the website. I don't have an exact date because I'm entering all of the surveys that were mailed back to me. So it's going to take me a moment, mm-hmm. but we will get all that information on the website.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to add?
I think that's it. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks for your time, too. Again, if people are interested, they can go online to oursummitcounty.org. You can fill out that survey. You can also follow them along. You can also register to stay involved and get emails as they're sent out. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW.